Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lunchtime Wisdom on the With Insights Radio Network with your host, Iggy Garcia, Mark Matheny. Sit back and relax, grab a sandwich, listen to some of the coolest hosts on the internet. Food for your soul, food for your heart. Now, on to the show.
Hello!
Welcome to Lunchtime Wisdom. I'm one of your hosts.
That was a brief rendition of The Sounds of Silence by Garfunkel.
The Sounds of Silence. I don't know what I was in for something, I totally forgot.
And I am Mark Matheny, rabbit hole, two fishes.
Yes, yes.
All those people.
This is actually a special show today. This is a precursor to Down the Rabbit Hole.
Yes.
This is an extension show.
Yes, so we try to bring you as many different varied guests as possible on our Tuesday show. And also for the bonus for you guys, so that you don't have to listen to us all the time. Today we are going to have our friend Matt Savinar as our guest. We'll be on about 12:30 time period, and that is 9:30 in the West Coast, which if you're on the West means it's a little bit after 9 and you're up and functioning already.
He's going to be up early.
But Matt is, he has a Kickstarter going for a new astrology magazine that all of us are excited about. We'll go into some details on that and let Matt give us the 411 on that. Matt has a radio show on KOWS 107.3 FM in Occidental, California. And you can find Matt at northbayastrology.com.
You say Occidental?
Occidental.
Oh, Occidental.
Occidental.
I think it's an accidental.
It wasn't an accidental, California. It was an Occidental.
It was an Occidental.
Which I'm guessing is in the North Bay area.
That's cool. My daughter's moving there. She's moving to the San Diego area. Leaves the 12th.
About 4 hours south of there, I believe.
Yeah. Little Markel. And she is off and running. Starting family. And Dad is sad. Dad is sad. And happy for her at the same time.
Yes,
I'm really happy for her. Actually, won't see her little fiery side here too much.
Your family is, man. You got all kinds of dude.
Yeah, man. Just like everybody's going all over the place. My oldest son just got into the weekend.
I saw that,
which was pretty cool. I'm happy for him that he's moving forward to wanting to be a father, and he's got a baby coming. So he wants to do the right things and take care of his family that's coming. So I wish them all a bunch of, make their luck out there, and do well. I don't believe in luck personally.
No, I believe in luck as much as I believe in coincidence, which is zero.
As much as I believe in Bugs Bunny coming through the rabbit hole and saying hi.
Well, Bugs Bunny might come through the rabbit hole, but I left my
mask. I think you'll come through
car.
The rabbit hole before
right.
Bugs Bunny. No, but I'm happy for them, man.
Right.
It was kind of cool because I actually did a ceremony for a good friends of ours.
So we had an entire experience, the entire circle of life last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
Funeral.
Well, let's start from there. Let's start from Monday down.
Right.
I'll let you start.
Right. So one of our friends in the metaphysical holistic community here suddenly passed away last week, right, as Mercury retrograde. And so we had a little ceremony for her. It was Tuesday or Wednesday. It was Wednesday, I believe. It was last Wednesday. So that was nice. Some of her friends and family were able to make it out on short notice, and we kind of celebrated her life and told some stories about her and our interactions with her, and kind of shared some experiences, and so that was a nice tribute. And you did a great job kind of leading that. You've been busy this last week.
Yeah.
So that was a nice ceremony we did there for one of our souls that was transitioning.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a, I'm probably forgetting four or five other things. Then we had a wedding on Sunday. I'm horrible with days anymore, especially around
Sunday.
Holidays. On Sunday with a couple of the other friends with our drum circle, and they run their own little offshoot drum circle down in Chillicothe. Or if you remember the Alice Cooper scene from the Wayne's World movie, Chillicothe.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. You're right. I totally forgot about that.
That's what I always think of, is the Alice Cooper scene in the he gives a little diet. That's probably on YouTube. Alice Cooper gives a little diatribe of how the Chillicothe is a Native American name, and gives a little history of
Chillicothe. Totally forgot about that.
Great
you're
Wayne's
right,
World
you're
movie.
Right. That's funny. That made me laugh.
And then we. And then you had, you had another engagement in your family, and
mm-hmm.
you have more grandkids coming.
I got two instant ones.
Yeah, right.
I guess we count them.
Yeah, right. So just kind of, you know, the circle of life, you know, people enter, people align forces, people leave groups. People leave the planet. People leave 3D. People join 3D.
And we have a new member of our group.
And we have a new member of our group.
Farmer Finger.
Farmer Finger.
Yeah, he joined our group, 3 weeks ago now? 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, I almost, just a really quick inside joke, I almost downloaded Take the Long Way Home by Supertramp to play at the beginning, but I did not do that.
I guess David was okay. He didn't get in too much trouble.
So, yeah, so very entertaining weekend. Very entertaining weekend. Lots of moving around and shifting, and lots of changes about. So,
and that's kind of how it works.
It's life, what life is. Life is changes. Life
begins,
is adapting to new people, new situations.
But Deb dying was kind of bizarre, dude. I was just
that was a shock.
For me. It's still kind of wrapping my mind around that one.
Yeah, that was a shocker.
Kids getting married is one thing, but someone just in your circle, you know, like that is like boom. It was just like, what the heck just happened?
Right.
I couldn't believe it. I was just like floored. But that's life. That's what happens. You know, we move on, and then we have a baby, and. Dante's kid is on his way. He'll be here in October. So it's the circle of life for sure. You're right about that.
Lots of new drummers ready to enter the scenario.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. The circle of life. I wonder if I can get this guy on here. Hey, would you like to share a little bit about the circle of life with us?
The circle of life, it goes round and round, and who knows where it comes out at, but hey.
What's up, brother?
Hey.
Probably on your lunch break.
How's
there.
How's it going, guys?
Good. What's up?
I caught some of the talk about, you know, the weekend and what was going on, and, you know, been kind of an active week, like you were saying, you know, with Deb departing, and then we were at a wedding, and, you know, just people, like you say, coming and going. Every moment, when you think about it, you know, on the planet, there's new beings arriving and beings leaving, and it's
mm-hmm.
it's mind-boggling when you think about how often that is. But the general trend I noticed with human population, anyway, is that large upward curve, and you know, it seems like with modern science and everything else, you know, people living longer, having more kids, you know, and being more stable in their medical. And even the social and economic environment, we are going to have a surplus of people here.
Yeah.
Real soon, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess we have to ask ourselves what we're going to do about that. What are we going, how are we going to face the upcoming, you know, population, you know, overload, I guess you could call it, or on our resources, on our environment, on each other, you know, when we get crowded in together, it affects a lot of things psychologically and physically. But so it kind of makes me wonder, you know, I know that if you and I are thinking about this and talking about this, that people up above us are thinking and talking about this, and they're going to kind of want to know how to manage, you know, because they're all into managing the human population in the world as it is. And they see all this coming, and they're probably thinking, well, you know, there's going to be a strain on resources, and, you know, we're going to have all these people with no jobs, and they're going to look it up and go, hey, what's up? What's going on? You know, so I don't know. Kind of goes back to what Mark talks about sometimes about, you know, the cabal, the folks up there on the top, right? You know?
Yep.
How
the powers that be, you know.
The powers that be, the powers that that want to keep on being, too. So I don't know. You know, I don't want to go down that road too far and take you off topic or anything like that. But it's something to think about because, you know, it's going to be an issue in our lifetime and definitely in our children and our children's children's lifetime. I put a little something out there on Facebook the other day when I put out there and said, you know, when I was born, the population of the world was 2.8 billion people, you know, and I'm now 58 years old. The population is over 7 billion people, and in 30 years, it's going to be 9 billion people.
That's a lot of people.
You know, that's a lot of people, you know. So I don't know what they're thinking. You know, maybe they're hoping for a massive human die-off somehow, you know, where we're all going to be able to, they'll be just, maybe we can get it down to maybe a billion people or, you know, maybe a little below that. We can manage that, but... So I don't know if what the plans are. I kind of think that's why that they're pushing GMOs so hard, because they really are concerned about starvation, and with a changing climate, you know, they want to have something in the fields that's going to be resilient and resistant to a lot of temperature and climate changes. So that might be the logic behind that, and also the logic behind trying to control the weather, because, you know, we've seen the CO2 going up and a lot of the weather's changing. So, you know, they're trying to manage what really they can't really even manage. So they're probably kind of at their wit's end about what to do with all the people that are going to be here. But for you and I, you know, on the street, it's, you know, it's pretty much life as usual for a while, and we'll just have to see what happens. But Lori said an interesting thing. You know, when I showed her that chart with the curve going up, Lori's the woman that I'm with, you know, so she gets to see all sides of me, and she gets some interesting conversations, or at least monologues on my side, so.
Yeah, we do, too.
I showed her that. Yeah, you know, yeah, you do, too. Yeah, like this one right now, but, you know, but when I showed her that, she said, you know, maybe we're meant to be off-planet, maybe we're not meant to be here on this planet, you know, for all of our existence. And that was kind of a surprising response from her, because she's not, doesn't usually think like that that I know of, you know, or, you know, wouldn't mm-hmm. really have responded like that, you know. But you know, maybe there's a higher reason for all of this people, you know, maybe we're gonna be taken off or something. I don't know. Anyway, just wanted to say that, you know, I'm here at work on my lunch break, and I'd really rather be with you guys. I'll say that right now. But, but you know, you got to do what you got to do for the time you got to do it. Yeah, I know.
Right.
We really had a good time, though, and it was great to get down to see our friends get married, and it really shows you that, you know, we really are a tribe of many peoples, and, you know, we're starting to form relationships outside of this, you know, the social circles that maybe we would have hung in otherwise, or, you know, some of the across barriers that we, artificial barriers that we put up around each other, you know. So that's a good thing, you know, and I think that's the future of what we're going to be seeing on the planet, is more of these small kind of communities and, you know, people forming those kind of associations to help one another out, you know. We can't rely on the government all the time to do things for us, you know, and we can't rely on the economy to be stable. with everything that's happening, you know. We really need to rely on each other and look for ways to live together, you know, then protect one another, that, you know, they're outside of, you know, waiting for the government to come and do it for us, you know, because they'll do it for us, but they want what they want from us after that. You know, when you take help or you take assistance from someone or something, then they pretty much own you in that regard. You know, they get to call the shots. So I can see a day when, you know, in order for the law and order to be restored, you know, hey, the military comes in, but, you know, you're going to come and go to your job. It's just, instead of money, you'll get paid in ration stamps. It's like, hey, go get your, you know, you can go get your bread and your cheese and whatever, you know, but you're not going to be able to buy anything with money, because money won't be the currency that they're using. So anyway, all of that said, how are you guys doing?
Good. I think we should send her to Detroit. You know, there's plenty of room there. Last time I was there, it was pretty empty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could fit $5 million
in abandoned
there.
Places. Yeah.
Yeah, doing good. I'm not for or not doing much. I prefer that they sit and not do anything. That's my preference. But you know, that's a piece of legislation that I would be for is, I mean, if you drive around Central Ohio or Columbus right now, the number of housing units going up is mind-boggling. Just between here and my girlfriend's house, I passed like 6 new complexes are going up. And it's like, where are these people? I don't think that companies should be able to build new buildings as long, let's say, and I'm just randomly making up a number here. Let's say you have, if there's a 25% capacity of the buildings in a city that are empty, I don't think you should be allowed to build new stuff without some very, very strict. I like looking at trees and grass. I'm tired of concrete, empty buildings.
Yes.
Yeah. You know the Weaver High School,
right,
where you're close to, by so, Weaver High School in Hilliard. There's a pretty close to where your girlfriend lives.
Oh, middle school.
Yeah. Well, middle school, yeah. I'm at Weaver Middle School, and the high school is across the street.
Yeah.
But that apartment complex right there wasn't there in the fall. Because I drove by the other day, I was like, where did that come from?
The one right down the road from me off 161 was thrown out of what is already a horribly congested area during rush hour. Hmm. They've just thrown up some, and they're really, really well-made homes when you put them up in 14 minutes. I have structural issues there in the long run. Right. So, I mean, you know, just because you can build something anywhere, I don't think that means that you should build something on every open square foot of space.
Isn't there any way we can recycle,
you know,
like building materials and stuff? I mean, isn't there? I mean,
right.
Half the stuff
right.
goes to the landfill. I'm floored when I drive by a construction site and I see perfectly good wood just pitched like it's nothing.
Right. People can use that, you know. People could build homes or shelters out of that stuff.
Sure. Used to be, you know, when I was a kid, you could grab that wood and make a tree fort, you know, or something like that. You know, now they throw it away. They'll probably arrest you if you try to grab it, you know.
You're absolutely right, David.
You know, so, but I've seen this before. You know, I lived in Alaska, and Alaska's got a famous boom and bust economy. So back when the pipeline was going, it was all like, oh, yeah, hey, let's build all this stuff. Let's, you know, build houses. And, you know, and then the fall came, the bust came, and, you know, those houses just sit empty. They give them foreclosure, or, you know, they're just a waste. And it happened again, too, when I was considering moving to Colorado. I went and I lived there for 6 months, and it was about the time that everyone in California, it seemed like, was moving there. They sell their house for twice what a house in Colorado was worth, so they could come in and buy these huge houses. I mean, mansions where two people lived, you know? Two people lived in a 38-room mansion. You know, what the hell? That's such an excess, you know. And then Farmer Brown's field, Farmer Fingers' field, became, you know, a subdivision overnight, you know. It was this frantic rush to build and to take advantage of all this money that was coming in from California. And, you know, mark my words, when I was there, I said, you know, this is going to bust after a while. They're just building forward so much that they're over-anticipating the amount of people that are going to be buying homes. And there again, you get houses sitting abandoned. And when we drive out in the country, when we go to these events, I see farm homes and I see, you know, houses that have just been left, who knows how many years they've been sitting there on land that's, you know, just is sitting unused. And, you know, there's such a disconnect sometimes between, you know, what's there and what, you know, and the need and the desire that we have to take ourselves out of the city and find a place like that. It's a little, you know, a little disheartening sometimes. I'm trying to find ways to, you know, how can you reclaim property or, you know, that's been abandoned like that? Is there any kind of laws that you can use to take that back over rather than just having it sit there? It happens when, you know, farm families grow up and the kids don't want to keep doing the farm thing. They want to move to the city where the jobs are. And, mm-hmm. you know, those parents and grandparents die off and then, you know, there's nobody to take that over and the bank takes it over and it just sits there and rots. So, you know, that's
exactly what happens. I mean, I know people have to pay their bills. I get that if you're going to make a contract. But there's got some worse where people will... I mean, you have something. I mean, I understand that.
I mean, just my issue, I mean, my point is, instead of continually tearing down trees and green areas, why not, once you get to a certain capacity of empty buildings in a city, if somebody wants to build a new business or a new mm-hmm. housing development or whatnot, they have to tear down an area mm-hmm. that has a bunch of empty buildings and rebuild in that area and, you know, one of certain area, not.
Well, would you like me to tell you why they don't want to do that?
They make more money the other way.
Well, that's true, but not everybody wants to live around minorities and blacks and people who are lower income and stuff, because that's what happens, you know.
I live in between Dublin and Lewis, and there's empty buildings and businesses there. I mean, any part of town, I can find you. Three strip malls.
Everybody's going north. Everybody keeps pushing the Great Divide, you know?
Right. And now West is exploding.
And West is exploding, too. So it's like...
Mm-hmm.
And, but South is kind of like... Not in, you know? East is not in, you know?
My mom live on the South End, and there's hardly any businesses still left open.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, mm-hmm. that's the sad truth of it.
You know, they've created a system. They've created this stuff to be this way, which is really sad.
And now in 30 years, some development company will come in, just like they did the, you know, Columbus Commons down there, and you know, other stuff. But they go around in old neighborhoods, they start to refurbish and revitalize. But still, mm-hmm. and, you know, until 25 years from now, those areas are just keep getting worse, and, you know, be more businesses closing, just be rows of empty buildings.
Right.
You just said it. They make an area depressed, and
mm-hmm.
they kill it, and then one day someone comes in there and buys it up for nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then try
to make a whole new development, make a whole new East End, a whole new whatever.
Right. I mean, look at the, you know, look at, you know, just looking at Columbus, you know, look at Northland Mall, Southland Mall, East Mall.
Mm-hmm.
All three of those, you know, gone. I think there's two stores left in Eastland Mall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only been open for like 30 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, there's just certain parts of it. And again, at some point, everything gets recycled. That area will be rejuvenated and there'll probably be nice businesses and stuff put up there. And
or downtown will be bigger one day.
Right.
My vision is the downtown will probably move south. Is, you know, going the other way north.
Right.
You'll have more skyscrapers and stuff eventually at some point.
Right. Because mm-hmm. that's where the cheaper land and room is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It'll happen.
Yeah,
They already need to add other more lanes to that 33 that I drive every day because traffic mm-hmm. backs up there because people have moved like we did down there and you know, they use it as a bedroom community. They commute back and forth, you know, to Columbus for work. So right about 7 o'clock, it starts to jam up, and it's, you know, it's 20 minutes to get from there to 270, and, you know, you're part of the metal river, you know, of cars there. And,
around 20th,
right. They've totally destroyed the north end of 23 and 270. That's, it's kind of getting to where it's passable now, but I stayed away from that area for about 3 or 4 months. It was just so hellish that.
It's crazy.
You know, I kind of think sometimes, I know that this lifestyle we live is not sustainable. You know, our economy is not. It's based on debt, you know, and there's got to be a better way to do things. There's got to be a better way to live than just going to work a job at a company and then going home and you're mentally exhausted or physically exhausted and you just go back to sleep and you get up and you do it again over and over and over again. People want more than that out of their lives. They want to be able to be creative. They want to be able to express themselves. They want to be able to find a place that isn't just a cubicle in a building, you know, doing a repetitive job for, you know, some guy up on the upper floors, you know, so they can look good. You know, I that can't be fulfilling. You know, we're living kind of an old pattern, like from the industrial age almost, you know, and it may be time to start thinking about different ways of living. You know, like I was saying, smaller communities, instead of money, we use a barter or trade system, or, you know, people earn work credits, or I don't know. You know, it's just doing things this old way just seems to be, especially with more people coming into the world, seems to be, how are you going to find jobs for everybody, you know, that you're going to get more demand on in the workforce. And, you know, our capitalistic way of doing things, we have to have a certain amount of unemployed people to draw from. You know, you can't give everybody a job, or there won't be anybody unemployed to, you know, to change out. But we created a system where people are like light bulbs. You know, you just unplug one when they burn out and plug in a new one. You know, we've lost the value of the worker, it seems like, you know, in the workplace. And now it's more like, you know, you're just a cog in the machine, you know, and if you can't make it, you know, you can go on unemployment for a while, but that runs out, and then what do? You know? Sounds kind of like they just want you to keep working until you die, and then they'll just, you know, push you aside, and somebody else can come along. They won't have to pay you any benefits, you know?
That's right.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
There's a light bulb burnout in row 7 of the Matrix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Reinsert. Put a new one in. Right.
All right, bro. We appreciate you calling in. We have a guest we're going to bring online, so hopefully you can stick around and listen.
Very good.
And, thanks for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Love you, brother.
Thank you, brother.
We'll see you all.
Bye-bye.
All right. That was awesome. I'm glad David got to share with us. Always love his insights.
Yeah, there was your local politics discussion for the week. Your local politics and civil engineering. Discussion.
But that little 23 is a mess, man. They're trying. Well, there's a bridge under a bridge or something now.
Right, and they're trying to expand it now.
Scary.
You got. We went to a movie like 3 months ago up there, and I missed the new turnoff, and to get probably 1/10 of a mile over back to that spot, it took me 30 minutes.
Oh, that's crazy.
Because I had to go all over this gigantic block there.
I don't wait for anybody.
Oh, it was hideous. Okay, so I believe our guest is on the line. Today, our guest on Lunchtime Wisdom is Matt Savinar. He has a Kickstarter out there, which I contributed a little bit to today for a new astrology magazine, and we will talk some about that. You can find Matt. He's got a YouTube channel. You can find him at northbayastrology.com. You can hear him on KOWS 107.3 FM in Occidental, California. North Bay Astrology Show. From, I believe it is 10 a.m. to noon Pacific Standard Time on Thursdays. And so we're going to talk some new astrology magazine and some of the current astrological energies and maybe go down the rabbit hole on some conspiracy theories. So please welcome our guest, Matt Savinar.
Hey, Mark.
Hello, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. Now, you know, there's conspiracy theories, there's conspiracy facts.
There is conspiracy facts, and we know which
conspiracy
side of those we're on.
Yeah.
Never get tired of it.
Hey, Matt, how you doing? I'm Iggy Garcia. I'm the other co-host here on the show, so we'll both be kind of...
Good. I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm good. Good. We're doing well. Thank
Excellent.
You.
Excellent.
Now, Mark, I know, is a Pisces with Cancer Moon. Iggy, do you know your Sun Moon by any chance?
I am actually a Sagittarius. That's about as far as I go.
He is a Sagittarius with a Moon in Scorpio, I believe.
Oh, okay. So a lot of high-risk overseas missions you go on?
That sounds
more
like
more than you know. They're actually good. They're heading to Peru, his
yes,
homeland here, in about a month or so.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah, it's the average
little
look
shamanic
at my side, I got Sag Sun Scorpio Moon. You guys have a comic book store there? Where are you guys near? Where are you guys located? In Hawaii, you're in Ohio?
Yeah, we're in Columbus. Yeah, there is a really big comic book store called The Laughing Ogre that is on High Street, which is 12 minutes from where we sit, 15.
Yep, that's correct.
See, if you want something on the Sag Scorpio tip, check out a comic book called The Activity. It's basically, I'll look at the charts for comic books based on their release date. You know, sometimes we'll write about those, use them as examples, and the activity staff of Scorpio Moon. And it's actually a reality-based comic book, and it's pretty good.
I'm just going to totally sideswipe this. Do you charts for all the superheroes based on their... Have you done that? For like a chart for Spider-Man based off...
Hello?
We hear you.
We hear you.
Yeah. Not for all of them. It depends on if there's an establishment date, like when the character was first released. So, like, I think Wonder Woman we figured out was a Sag with Taurus Moon. Superman is a Aquarius with an Aries Moon. Same as you know, guys know who Ronda Rousey is.
No, not a fan.
Oh, okay, she's She's basically the Superman of female mixed martial arts. She's Aquarius Sun.
Okay.
So if they've got a release, Black Widow, I think, is the Aries with the Pisces Moon. I'm not sure for that.
Makes sense.
Yeah, if it's got a release date, then you can look up the chart for that. And oftentimes, more often than not, the biographical arc or the basic psychological architecture of that character will match that of people with that Sun Moon combination.
That's pretty cool.
Fantastic. I have not. I've looked up. I've done thousands of charts on sports teams, rock bands, events. I've got all kinds of charts on weird stuff. Movie, really, really good, really interesting thing on one of my classes on Godzilla, how Godzilla's chart compares to Japan's and the two atomic bombs were dropped in the world, and the re-releases of the newer Godzilla movies and stuff like that. So it's fascinating how that stuff, how the charts of things seem as silly as that really play out well.
I'll never look at my books the same again.
Right. Right.
That's it.
Yeah, I know.
So,
totally.
So a little...
I'll give you guys a couple of examples. This magazine I'm working on, Hexagon. So the big three themes in the first issue are hip-hop, police brutality, government conspiracies, corporate criminality. Now, the three movies are big three movies that are coming out that week, same week as Hexagon is being released. The NWA biopic, Straight Outta Compton, which is about hip-hop and police brutality. Then it's this movie called American Ultra, which is sort of like Enemy of the State meets Cheech and Chong. That's about government conspiracies. And then Agent 47 or Agent 49, which is about corporate criminality. So
Nice. Yes. just on the film thread there, just something interesting I saw going around was there was some, I guess he's kind of an astrologer, thing, saying he thought there was a big earthquake at the end of May, and it was very close to the release date of the San Andreas Fault movie with The Rock in it.
Yeah. Hey, you want to know something very strange that you mentioned that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
If you look on the cover of Hexagon, there's somebody there on the cover who is the body double for the actress in The Rocks in that movie.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah.
That's funny.
My reception is really crappy here. You guys are like dropping in and out. Do you mind if I just drive down the street? There'll be better reception.
Do you want to call back in like a minute?
Yeah, I'll just call back in like in 3 minutes, if that's all right.
Okay, awesome. Sounds great.
Or something.
Yeah, okay, bye.
It's funny because May's not over.
Right.
You know, we still got to go till Monday.
Right. I think this guy had predicted like May 28th or whatnot. Now, I'm not saying all astrology backs this up. In fact, I found some flaws thing with this video with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it had some reference trains from Nostradamus from Chins, but then there were some bad trains things. So we'll be extremely skeptical about this fiction, but it's very interesting that the St. Andreas Fault movie is coming out right around the time.
I mean, but it is a reality. It could happen. I mean, all the evidence is there and all, and just everything. Right. It's just the volatile area.
It is, but it all, traditionally, all the big earthquakes, astrological correlations to them,
mm-hmm.
and I don't really see those on May 28th. So there's many different things you can look at, but
sure.
Most of the big earthquakes are usually from Pluto, Uranus, or Neptune stations,
mm-hmm.
and there are configurations going on. Actually, there's some big configurations out there happening, not that big, and also some of them are loose up. So
yeah.
It's very. But I love doing charts for. I spend a lot of time doing charts for movies, album releases. You know, I've done a lot of charts for like when I take their first whatever, their first single or album, whatever, and use a chart for that. That works like ridiculously well, more than you would think it would. It's really very, very interesting to look at. So it's even fictional, even though it's like Godzilla is totally spot on. Because, you know, Godzilla born out of, you know, fears of nuclear war and atomic bombs.
That's true.
And, you know, Godzilla in the movies is created by a nuclear blast that, you know.
Awakens them from the.
Right.
It's because they feed off the radiation.
Right.
It makes them stronger. Yeah, our friend will call us back here in a little bit. He's. Is that your phone? Is it ringing? He's calling in. Where are you?
No.
That's funny. No, but let's take a little quick, teeny little break, and we'll come right back. All right?
Okay. Sounds good.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your free online holistic publication resource radio for trusting your intuition, achieving self-discovery, and following your soul self.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com, your free online resource for achieving self-discovery and inspiration. WithInsights Radio is a listener-supported radio station, and your donations are greatly appreciated. We cover a variety of topics, interviews surrounding the metaphysical and holistic and natural medicine, alternative healing modalities, and much more. Thank you for tuning in to WithInsightsRadio.com.
Put him on too, okay? I'm gonna put him on too. Welcome back to With Insights Radio.
Lunchtime Wisdom Cafe. Wisdom may not be available in your areas. today we have our special guest, Matt Savinar. You can find Matt at NorthBayAstrology.com. He has a Kickstarter, which I have shared on the With Insights Radio Facebook page, and it is on my Facebook page. And it is for a new astrology magazine called Hexagon. And I believe our friend Heather Renee Horton, who's been a guest on my show several times, and I think both Matt and I were on her show multiple times. I know she contributed to the Kickstarter, and I believe maybe contributing to the magazine at some point. And so just a quick rundown on that, for those of you not in the know, just a quick rundown on the history of astrology magazines. Essentially, there are two. There's a really a long-running astrology little magazine. You would see it at the checkout counter next to like the Reader's Digest and stuff. It was called Del Horoscope, and I believe it's still around, been around for a few decades at least, and I'll let Matt correct me on any of this info I have wrong here in a second. But Del Horoscope was kind of pretty much on love and relationships and maybe work stuff. It was kind of written very much for, I think, a very basic level for the most part. My favorite astrology magazine, and I've been a subscriber for about 10 years, is called The Mountain Astrologer, run by Tem Takkar as the editor there. Mountain Astrologer is a great magazine. It's, I think, maybe more for the practicing astrologer. It's kind of pretty in-depth on some statistical and analytical research type stuff. So, but there's a really big gap that I think Matt has picked up on here between the kind of very basic, you know, who should I marry, who should I date level of astrology and the in-depth thing. Well, from what I have seen from the little previews they've posted for Hexagon, I think there's going to be more stuff that people can relate to, and like stories in the news. And so I'm going to shut up and let Matt tell us in a little better detail of what kind of things we can see out of Hexagon once he gets the donation total there on Kickstarter.
Yeah, so you pretty much got it there. There is a there's a gap there. The other thing, like, I've only seen one copy of Dell. It was pretty good. I mean, I read Jupiter and Cancer. I have Jupiter and Cancer. They did a whole thing with Jupiter and Cancer. It was great.
Me too.
I wouldn't anticipate seeing, like, the article that Heather is going to write for the second issue is an astrological review of this comic book called Bitch Planet, which is a feminist-themed comic book about female gladiators in space. You're not going to see that in Dell. I kind of doubt it.
Right.
And again, I'm not knocking Dell. Dell's great. I have not seen any articles quite like that in TMA. TMA is great, though. But that is something you would see, you know, in a Hexagon. Now, you've got the other thing that's different. Your readers probably are smart enough to know that, or your listeners, but a lot of people in the general population. You can use astrology to look at things like the National Security Agency, Monsanto. Yep. You know, all of these type of all the issues of our time have astrological components to them. So, like in this first issue, our premiere issue, we have an article on the National Security Agency that I wrote. Originally, it was in TMA about a year and a half ago. And I revised that, added a lot of imagery that was not available a year and a half ago. And that's the first part of a three-part series. Part two is on the National Reconnaissance Office, who runs the spy satellites. Part three is on the CIA. So that's the type of stuff most people don't normally associate with with astrology. So that's kind of where our wheelhouse is. We are going to have forecasts. And my thinking is forecasts, everybody reads their sign forecasts, even professional astrologers. So if they're done well, that helps bring in, you know, people who are at least moderately interested in astrology. And then it looks a lot different than what most people associate with astrology. I went with more of like an espionage thriller slash occult, sort of occult espionage thriller look. Because my thinking is usually when people get it, like astrology is already perceived to be of the occult, but we've kind of taken that and given it like a professional, like it's a combination of it looks kind of occultish, but kind of professional too. And I think that's a more intriguing, compelling way to package the material than a lot of what's out there.
The cover looks beautiful, mm-hmm. and it's up on the With Insights Radio Facebook page, and it's up on my Facebook page, and it's up on Matt's page. Cover, and it's on the Kickstarter link, which I've also put up on all those pages. Yeah, it looks beautiful, and in my monthly classes that I hold, I go into a lot of that kind of looking at conspiracy type stuff. And so I can't wait for the first issue. I'm really into that kind of looking at charts of agencies, groups, and countries, and outside of the normal kind of stuff you run across. So I find that fascinating.
I'm trying to think if I know, like, that comic book, The Activity. Now, the organization is based on is a Pisces, but the comic book is the most secret unit in all of the entire Pentagon, more secret than Navy SEALs or anything like that. That's what that comic is based on. It's kind of got a. It's not a conspiracy. It's all, you know, reality based. But if you're into conspiracy thriller, if it's not a person who likes watching something like Enemy of the State, you might dig that type of thing.
Right. That sounds awesome. Sounds awesome.
So we have stuff that, like, it's not all conspiracy. We have a major feature on hip hop, a major feature on the feminine asteroids. So you know, there's a lot of there's a wide range of strong writing.
Awesome. Yeah, I really liked. I saw there's a guest article by Michael Luton, I believe.
Yes. Now that is on the more conspiratorial. Me and Mike are the conspiracy people. He's in the first issue. So, his article's the Capricorn conspiracy. So what happened, Mike saw the video, and then I sent him a prototype, and he really liked it, and so he offered to contribute an article. So the folks at home, Mike Luton is very, very, he's like a legend among us astrologers. So much so he was even in a Samsung Galaxy commercial about 2 months ago. And the commercial was really good. They made astrologers look good, and Mike made us look good in this commercial. They had him do the chart for the Samsung Galaxy 6. Mm. And you can find it on YouTube. But anyway, so Mike is a legend amongst us. So obviously, when he was like, hey, I want to do an article, or I have an article I can offer you, I was like, oh, I totally take it. Plus, I read Mike's site, and I buy every time he has a new report out, like, oh, this is the Jupiter and Leo score Saturn and Scorpio, or he just had one out about the current Mercury retrograde. I always automatically buy them. So I was obviously thrilled that he'd want to write an article.
Yeah, Michael's stuff is awesome. Michael's stuff's definitely awesome. I read his posts frequently as well. I'll have to check out some of his reports. But I'm definitely very much in the conspiratorial vein myself. So tell people who are new to you, tell us a little bit about you. Where did you, where were you hatched at? How did you get into...
I like that hatch.
Well, that's a long, I have a saying. what I do, my arc of my career, okay, is very difficult to explain in one sentence. So, I am an attorney, but I'm what's called voluntarily inactive. Okay, so I finished school back in 2003, took the bar, passed the bar. While I was waiting for my bar results, I was temping, put up this website called lifeafteroilcrash.net about what's known as peak oil, which is what I felt was the real reason we were going into Iraq, and this was back in 2003. And that site, I just put it up because I thought, well, maybe I'll find some other people who feel similarly And, you know, just, you know, I thought at the time, if I got 5 visits a day, I'd be happy just to meet some other like-minded people. Anyways, next thing I know, it goes viral. I remember in late December, early January, I was down in San Bernardino for a job interview, and I came back and I had 100,000 visits 2 days in a row. So,
oh, wow.
That was in 2003. And this is before Facebook, Twitter, all that type of stuff. So when this is back when you like going viral actually kind of meant something.
Right.
So because today anything can go viral for a day and nothing happens.
Yeah,
back then, the only way something could go viral was by people actually have to email their friends and be like, hey, I just read this site. It's really important stuff. You should check it out. It's not like they just share it on Facebook and whatnot. So it kind of meant a little more back then. And that went viral, and it kept going viral basically for 10 years. And
wow.
So I turned that into, I mean, there was a business component too. I had Amazon ads, you know, for books related to the environment or how to, you know, live off, you know, get off fossil fuels, stuff like that, solar ovens and all sorts of solar stuff. So that went on for 10 years. And then I kind of transitioned into astrology about 4 years ago. And, a year and a half ago that article in the NSA, that was a cover article for TMA about a year and a half ago. And I got to thinking, well, this is cool. Wow, you know, one submitted article to TMA, which ironically or maybe not coincidentally, sent that to them the same day Ed Snowden sent his stuff to Glenn Greenwald at the UK Guardian, the same day I sent my NSA article to them. I thought, you know, TMA is great. They can't be all things to all people, you know. So that was around the time I started thinking, maybe I should start another magazine or something different, a bit different. And it's a very difficult process to start a magazine. So we're in the middle of a Kickstarter, and we are going pretty well. We have about a week left, 6 days actually, and 70 or over 70% or at 70%. So. We'll see what happens.
Awesome.
Fantastic. And the release date for the first issue is supposed to be, was it August 15th? Is that what I saw?
August 19th.
August 19th.
So yeah.
Awesome.
And that was picked out astrologically, as people
think. I would hope so. I would hope so. Yeah, I get... I was going to get people ask me for info after they've already set the date on things. It's like,
yeah, what's up with that? And then people, then you're like, they're like, well, I can't undo it. I'm like, well, then why are you asking if you can't undo it? Why ask? Sometimes you have no choice in something. Even with the magazine, you know, we started the Kickstarter. We started before Mercury retrograde, well before it, but we have no choice but to end it during in the middle of a Mercury retrograde. That's not. You would want to avoid that, but it's impossible with the timeline that we have. There's no way to do it otherwise. There's sometimes you can't always pick the date that has everything perfect. Something's going to be retrograde. There's going to be some tense square or something. But then people will, what you just said, people will like, they'll ask you like, well, you know, wait till the last minute to pick a good day. Like,
God. Right, I get
those
questions.
I think it's like magic.
Lot,
like you can just pick out a day, and then it's magically going to work out or something.
Right. I get that a lot. It's like, instead of when should I schedule my surgery, I always get, I've scheduled a surgery for this date, and it's 3 days from now.
Yeah.
Is that a good energy for that day?
Yeah.
Like,
here's something... I always go to somebody else. There's an astrologer I go to get timing done, any electional thing. I always pick the wrong days when I try to do them on my own. It's crazy. I lose like, I'm like, you know, I'm not like a slouch when it comes to this stuff. I'm pretty decent. And whatever discernment and whatever skills I have, it's like they go totally out the window when I try to do my own.
Me too. I have astrologers that I go to too, because I will infinitesimally focus on or obsess on one little aspect or detail and just like completely completely lose sight of the big picture. I'll just get like fixated on one thing when it's my stuff and I'm looking at my chart. And it's like, oh, I'll pick one, and I'll get one good energy for that day and like nine really crappy things because I'm like, I'm not going to have this aspect.
I remember there was one thing I went to pick, and I somehow missed the fact that Mars was going to be opposing my Sun, which is not a good kind of confrontational. Mars and Pluto, they were conjuncting Capricorn. And that's a very, for folks who are a little newer to astrology, just like a really confrontational energy.
There's
going to be days where it's not like you can just hide on those days. But if I was doing that for a client, I would spot that immediately. Oh, Mars, Pluto are going to be squaring or opposing their Sun that day, huh? It's a little bit of a better day. But then when it was for myself, it was right there in front of me, and I couldn't see it.
I totally have to go to other people for, like, energy work and for, like, backup on astrology stuff for myself. I think I'm pretty good at reading other people's charts, but yeah, I will constantly just screw myself on trying to pick dates for myself.
What's the chart for your guys' show look like?
You pulled that up.
I don't. Yeah, I have it. I don't think I have it with me. It's a Sagittarius stellium. The chart is. I hope I don't screw this up. December, 9th, 2009, Columbus, Ohio, mm-hmm. I think 8 p.m., I think. I may be a day or two off on that. But it's heavy Sag energy.
Was that when we still had the, let's see, 09? What Jupiter was still in it? It was probably in Pisces at that point.
I believe that's correct. I think it was all Sag, Capricorn, and I think the Jupiter and Pisces. It was really heavy. I think 80% of the chart, I think, was in Sag and Capricorn, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, then
there's worse possibilities. That's not a bad combination.
Right, especially for reaching the masses, mm-hmm. that Sagittarius energy is great. And I have done an interesting comparison. Our little core group here and stuff, that like everyone who's got shows on the network and everything, I've done a comparison with all of our charts, and everybody in our little group seems to have, if not at least one or two planets, a stellium in the low degrees of Scorpio. So that's kind of our gathering point, mm-hmm. amongst all the hosts and stuff on the network is that low degrees of Scorpio. So there's kind of that underlying theme there. Read into that as you will.
Yeah, so you have a bunch of paranoid freaks there. I'll fit in perfect.
That's us.
While I'm thinking of this, I'm going to throw this out there. I'd like to have you on my Friday show on Mark the Rabbit Hole, in August maybe, when the magazine's coming out.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
That would be fantabulous. So what else? You have a weekly radio show on 107?
Yeah, I do, and... out here in Sonoma County on a community radio station, and we do astrology. Well, like you guys, we do a lot of conspiracies
and we do a lot, don't we?
Yeah,
we do.
It's probably as much new, political news type stuff as it is astrology at this point. I think actually for this magazine, a lot of the people I've met. For the magazine, I met through the show, actually.
Awesome. Yeah, we have various, on our network here, we have various spiritual, metaphysical, mm-hmm. areas that each host kind of specializes in. I guess I'm kind of the conspiracy freak
the
most.
Yeah,
I'm
the most of us.
I think my show is by far the darkest of.
It is called Down the Rabbit Hole.
It is called the Rabbit Hole. I would say my show is definitely
the darkest. Let me ask you guys a question. What's
the
craziest conspiracy theory you've ever heard? So there's some conspiracy things that are actually true, like the fact that government's listening to all our phone calls. That one turned out to be true.
Right.
The CIA's involvement in the drug trade, that has turned out to be true.
Right.
The fact that the government experimented on black men, giving distributing
Tuskegee
infecting, yeah, the Tuskegee experiment. So these are all conspiracies that have turned out to be, or Operation Northwoods, that was another one, turned out
yes.
to be completely true, no doubt about it. Confirmable through reputable, even mainstream sources now at this point. What's a crazy one you heard where you're like, you know what, most likely that's not true. I'll never rule anything out, but most likely that's not true. But damn, it's entertaining to think about.
I would have, man.
There's so many.
Yeah, that's right down my. I think the.
What's your favorite one?
And I need to differentiate very clearly because it's a Mercury retrograde.
Yeah.
And Mercury, Saturn, the Sun, and Mars are all squaring my Mercury, and so I'm sure this is not going to come out right. I think that the craziest one, the one that I hear let me reiterate already. I'm already going to stop myself. The one that I hear the most. That I think is very easily provable to be untrue is that on, and I'm singling this one part of this out, is that there were no planes at all on 9/11.
Oh, yeah, the hologram thing.
The hologram theory for the World Trade Center.
Well,
now,
I will tell
every
you
other
a theory
conspiracy...
About-
Every other conspiracy around 9/11, I'm in at least partial, if not complete, agreement on. But that one is
the thing with that is actually that could be something that whoever the powers of B are, I don't know, that could be the type of thing that gets distributed to poison the well.
Yes.
So what happens is something like that gets put out to the public, and a certain portion of the population, for some strange reason, decides to believe it. I can't understand that, but if you have a representative sample of people, say a million people, there's going to be a certain small percentage that would believe the most things that are, as you said, demonstrably not true. Then what happens is anybody like me or you who says, well, okay, I don't know what happened on 9/11, but this Operation Northwoods document, which has been confirmed to be true, boy, that's sure awful strange. That sounds a lot like 9/11. There was really strange insider trading going on over the airline stocks 2 days before. That is really difficult to explain away. There's a lot of stuff like that is completely – you could find via mainstream news. Operation Northwoods was in ABC News, I think, a couple months before 9/11. And then the insider trading thing was covered in the SF Chronicle, and then just all of a sudden nobody talked about it after about a week. And so there's stuff like that, but then there's people like you and me who are like, okay, I'm not so stupid that I'm going to look at this and not look at it more. Like this is really strange coincidences there. Then what happens though is then people will hear, I heard those 9/11 conspiracy theorists think that the holograms, they think holograms controlled by reptoids hit the Chase Towers. And then all of us get bunched into
lumped
that.
In. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, controlled. They use agent provocateurs or whatever. They throw some crap bit of information. When something starts gaining steam, they throw some crap bit of information in there to, like you said, poison the well. Just like,
did you see the books that they supposedly found in Bin Laden's compound?
Yes. Oh, my God.
And it was like, I'm like, wait a minute. I have all of these books. John Perkins, not all of them, but like John Perkins, I have the political, the ones that, like, Mike Rupert and John Perkins, I have all of their books. And I'm like, wait a minute. Now what will happen is somebody will be like, oh, you read Mike Rupert's book, which is in the Harvard Business Library, or you read John Perkins, and John Perkins is a very, you know, reliable person. I mean, at least as reliable as you're going to find, you know, within the news world or whatnot. I'm not saying he's perfect or anything like that.
Right.
But these are, like, reliable, generally pretty reasonably reliable people. And now somebody will be like, oh, that was the book that was in Bin Laden's compound. So obviously you hate America or something, you know?
Right, exactly, exactly. I mean, just, I mean, we won't even bring up the point that, you know, despite some of the Hollywood movies that have come out about we killed Bin Laden and threw him off the boat in the middle of the ocean because that's the Islamic tradition.
Did we kill him? He'll show up next week.
Yeah, that would be strange, too.
If you believe that one,
really,
we need to have a talk.
He'll be at Cedar Point.
That seems
next
strange.
Week.
I mean, remember when they killed Saddam? It wasn't like they didn't let us see the video of them killing Saddam when Saddam got hung or killed his kid, his two sons.
I saw that.
Right.
We all saw that, and you know, nobody freaked out. But yeah, that had a lot of really, and it was like, well, I remember something like he was on kidney dialysis, and you can't live on kidney dialysis for that long unless you're basically getting to a hospital. So there's just a lot of stuff about that that doesn't add up. But
right, my little phrase that I put together is, you know, fact that a guy in a cave in Afghanistan on kidney dialysis using a cell phone and a laptop ran the biggest terrorist attack in the history of the earth is a little bit funny thinking wise.
So I think they did kill him.
No, he was about,
I think he's been dead a long time ago.
Yes. Many reliable reports, unlike ones that come from our government, say he was killed, like, I think it was 2003 in that area, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah, long before.
That was like
and
the Family
then,
Guy version of it.
Right.
30 of the guys, there was a helicopter that crashed.
Yes.
That had 30 Navy SEALs on board, and I don't know if they, I don't think they're from the exact same unit that killed Bin Laden or whoever they killed that day, but that seemed very strange too.
Oh,
again,
maybe it's
just a coincidence.
Yeah,
it was obviously a tragic one because 30 people died. But
right,
but it just seemed like from the same unit that killed Bin Laden. It was like 6 months later, and those helicopters apparently never crash.
Right, yeah. And actually, it was several of the guys who were supposedly involved in that raid were killed in that crash. So here's my BS litmus test. If the government comes out and says something and it doesn't sound very plausible, and then all the witnesses die within like 6 months or a year of the event, if all the witnesses die, then something just like Sandy Hook. Mm-hmm. Do you know that? Almost like 30 of the first responders there, between media, police chiefs, mm-hmm. fire marshals, you know, like almost everyone who was a first responder at that scene is dead.
I didn't know that. I haven't followed the Sandy Hook stuff, but I did not know that. And if that's true, that's very strange.
Yeah. Not to mention they destroyed all the evidence just like they did with 9/11. They tear down the wreckage as soon as they can and ship it off to another country. I mean, biggest crime scene in the world.
Yeah.
And we
all that gold and all that paperwork totally gone.
Iggy, you got the Sag Sun Scorpio Moon. What do you have to say about all this?
Well, you know, Mark knows me pretty well. No, my biggest thing is like when you mentioned the soldiers went down there who were involved in the capture of so or whatever of some of Bin Laden, and then all of a sudden they mysteriously just die. You know, these trained Navy SEALs, they all drowned in the water.
Right, you know? right.
You know, so it's just my son-in-law is in the Navy, so those are the first things they train you how to stay afloat. So I don't know.
You mean they teach Navy SEALs to swim?
Yes, did you know that?
Oh,
you know, in Russia they use real SEALs.
Oh,
to penetrate and infiltrate. Did you see that on TV?
No, I missed that one.
Yeah, that's shit. No, I'm right along there with everybody.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Yeah, I actually think they handcuff them or they cuff their leg. I saw some documentary. They actually have to learn to swim if they're even when their hands and legs are tied. So you're looking at some pretty good swimmers.
Yeah, I just unless they got ate by sharks or something.
Right.
Yeah, it's I just think our government does some things, some really shady stuff. There's some really shady people who they don't care about anybody except themselves. And they'll do anything to protect their interests.
He's a senator. He's like the third or fourth. He's really high up. And his there was a ship found with like 90 kilos of cocaine on it or something to blunt his family.
Oh, really?
I didn't hear that one.
This is just recently. This is like in the last 6 months. He's one of these politicians who you will recognize because you always see him on TV. I just don't. Mitch McConnell, I think it is.
Oh, Mitch McConnell.
Oh,
really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. The
Google Mitch McConnell cocaine, and you'll see what comes up. Fish.
The controlled, I don't even know when to say, infiltrator for. Not that I trust Rand Paul, but Mitch McConnell is a shady dude, and I don't really know what he's.
That's why I got out of politics real quick.
That's what I'm right.
Because I did not want to be associated with those people.
Yeah, right. But yeah, McConnell's been caught doing some really weird stuff just in the last week, with Patriot Act hearings and some stuff like that. He's. I mean, people reserve the right to change their mind. I mean, this is an ever-growing and evolving and changing planet. Mm-hmm. People are allowed to change their minds. But when you're an elected politician and you change your mind like every, I don't know, 8 to 10 seconds, I start to have, you know, it's the John McCain syndrome. It's like you don't, when you change your mind every 2 seconds, I don't know what you stand for on anything.
Well, that's
I don't believe anything you say.
Well, my biggest thing is, how we use the military, how the politicians have used the military. And I think it's for the, my theory is that they put them out there to go fight their little wars and do their little things so they don't overthrow them, you know,
right.
Cause a coup
right.
and throw them out of office. Because you know what? If they didn't get their way and they didn't get to play with their toys, you know, it'd probably be a lot different. So the best thing to do is keep these guys busy over there, keep the generals doing their little thing, having fun, blowing up some shit, you know.
Yep.
And then they don't have to mess with these guys. Oh, well, you know. But
there is a theory that if you've got a surplus male population, that basically like the wars are used to profit while utilizing the surplus male population. I don't know if that's true or not, but it does kind of seem to be like that does seem to be what's going on. Mm-hmm. Or at least seems to be something to that. And it's really sad, actually. But,
it is sad.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about Jade
Helm. No, on that note.
Yes, Jade Helm, yes.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Jade Helm. I haven't been following. I've been too busy with the magazine.
Right, so what other, do you have any other, do you teach classes or anything in your area where... Where else can
no,
people
I'm not,
find that?
I don't feel like I'm experienced enough to. I don't know that I'm experienced enough to. I mean, I guess I could. I help my friend out with some of her classes. But I don't. I feel like you've got to be in it for a long time to teach classes. I mean, I guess I probably could, but no. I mean, I have my radio show, so that's kind of like in a. I end up teaching through
right.
that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think that's what we do too. A lot.
So if you could be any kind of a tree, Matt, what kind of a tree would you be?
Oh, I don't know.
Palm tree? No,
I have no idea. I guess apple tree.
Oh, there,
where
there,
I
we
live.
Go. There we go.
Where I live is ecologically friendly to apple trees. So if this is where you haven't seen apples, if you ever eaten a Gravenstein apple, that's from right here. So if I was an apple tree, I would have a better chance of surviving here in Sonoma County because the environment is more friendly to me.
I'm really excited for his magazine. I can't wait for it to come out.
Yes, I will certainly bring
I'm excited, too. Now, I'm just stressed because, you know, Kickstarter is a This is like my break from managing the Kickstarter program, the Kickstarter campaign. It is a 24, it's like an 18-hour-a-day thing. Mm. I mean,
gotcha.
It's not an 18-hour-a-day thing, but yeah.
Well,
so
well,
I'm excited for the magazine, too, but I got some things I got to accomplish in the next week or so.
Will there be a digital version of the magazine online as well, or it's just going to be straight magazine?
We're going to do print. It is primarily a print magazine. I'm debating whether to have a digital version available or not. I have thought, I talked to the designer. He said, yeah, we can do a digital version. It's not a problem. I thought, well, maybe we'll add like a $5 option to the Kickstarter, and some people who are, you know, we're in the Boudon Capricorn here, so the economy is tough. People who maybe only have $5, so we should get a digital version. I'm just debating that. Do I want it out digitally? And also with some of the photographs, I'd have to go back and pay. I don't know how much more. It may not be that much more, but I know some of them, we got them, the photographs licensed for print only. And
okay.
So you have to go get a different license and pay more money to have them print and digital. So I just figure out, would we even get enough digital downloads to cover the extra cost of the photographs?
Yeah, you really don't know until you... But
yeah.
Your magazine would become a collector's item very quickly.
I hope so. That'd be great. I did think about offering... I thought this would just be a little too Leo-ean. The magazine has three planets in Leo based on when we're going to release it, Sun, Mars, Venus. I thought maybe we could have something where part of the Kickstarter, we'd have a... like 10 copies where they get signed by all the people on the cover.
There you go.
I thought,
nice.
Is that a little too outrageous, though? Like, is
no.
that a little bit too, like, who the hell do you think you are, Matt? Like, that, like, you know, like,
no,
like seriously, that's only something you do when you're an actual celebrity. Like, are people going to, if I put that up today or tomorrow, I was like, oh, this is one of the perks is, you know, because I have a whole plan for the covers involving the same three people where it almost becomes like a different movie. Each cover is like a different movie, you know,
nice.
Where we act out a scene, back out a scene that summarizes content of the magazine. And so I thought, oh, okay, that maybe I'd have the three of us sign it, but it just seems too outrageous almost.
Well, make it like a special edition, like one of those, you got to have it. There's only like 10 of them, you know, or whatever. And
like, should I have that gold glitter on it or something?
Yeah,
yes.
Gold glitter.
Right. You should make some issues that are scratch and sniff. Scratch and sniff cover.
What would it? What would? What was? What would be a scent associated with Leo? Something really?
I don't know.
Cat pee.
Oh God, you guys.
Yeah, that would.
I'm not read up enough on aromatherapy. I'm sure there's some aromatherapy other than cat pee. I'm sure there's come on, guys, help me out here. I'm sure
a jungle scent.
An aromatherapy associated with Leo that we could use.
Like flowery scent.
Yeah.
You know, something that...
Sunshiny. Lemon.
That's your growl.
Lemon. Lemon,
no, you
would be
yeah,
like,
lemon. Yeah, that might work. Although I think of lemon as being disinfectant, that would be more like if it was a Virgo.
Right, that's true.
But if you had a scratch and sniff and you were telling the story, you know, as you were
right.
going along with it, that would be kind of cool. You know?
A scratch and sniff astrology conspiracy comic book.
How would you smell
yeah.
the gunpowder?
Well, I did talk to some people about doing a comic book. That's a little more complicated, though. Having like an insert, like an astrology comic book as an insert. But it's a little.
That's when you can do the digital version on your website. On the
right.
comic. You can like spin it off.
Right.
This is
going
to be fun to watch.
Watch the evolution here of a.
Of the magazine.
So obviously, if the you would have scratch and sniff for Leo. Yeah. Sunflower.
Okay. Yeah, that would work.
The sun.
Yeah, that would be cool. Just sunflower of a scent, really.
We'll make one up.
Yeah.
Yeah, sunflower seeds have a bit of a... I'm just making stuff up now.
No, but that's how ideas become, you know.
Right,
you know, they
right.
come out of nothing sometimes. You just joke around, and next thing you know, you've come up with an idea, kind of like his magazine, you know. There's only two magazines... of astrology there, right? Now they're what?
Yep.
There's three now, right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
And, you know, this caters to a whole different group of people.
Absolutely.
You know, he's talking about hip-hop. He's talking about, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
you know, conspiracy, it opens up the window completely different, you know, something that I would be interested in, you know, versus just reading just information.
Right,
telling
right.
Telling a story within the framework. So I'm a big hip-hop guy, you know, break dancer, but, you know, since I was a young guy and I still dance. And so those kind of things interest me. It kind of takes a whole new...
You'd be interested. The article in the first one on hip hop is just mixtapes for your sign. So it's a basic unsigned astrology article. It's different though than most astrology articles because it's got hip hop. It's basic article but with a different angle from what you see in most astrology because of the inclusion of hip hop. What we have planned for the second issue, Jason Fleming, who goes by Sagittarian Mind. He actually found the chart for hip-hop based on when the what's considered the birth of hip-hop happened, which was a party in 1973 in the Bronx thrown by Kool Herc. And it's the Leo with the Capricorn moon. Leo's entertainment. Capricorn moon is all about being nourished through business. So literally it stands for the entertainment business. But that's going to be in the second issue. So Hello?
Yeah.
You just cut out for 1 second. We can hear you now.
Oh, so yeah, so that would be something that sounds like you might be more interested in that.
Yeah, I just find that, you know, hip-hop is one of those cultures that, you know, people don't really realize how big it really is. It's huge.
Yeah, definitely, and there's a generational thing, too. I grew up, the only music I heard when I was a kid was hip-hop. We lived in Los Angeles, and I didn't even know there was other types of music, you know?
Yeah, my friends here, they're a little bit rock and roll.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit more on the jive and hip-hop and jazzy.
I'm very diverse. I grew up on, like, the classic rock and stuff, but I'm pretty... I own everything from... Barbara Streisand to Megadeth to new agey stuff to I have a little bit of everything, I would say.
Cool.
Now, have you heard Chris Rock's shtick about the music you like, how what determines the music you will always love?
Oh God, I have to hear
I have to look that up.
He's got a great shtick. It basically comes down to you will always love the music that was on the radio when you first started liking the opposite sex or whatever sex that you're into.
Oh,
if you think about what was on when you were like 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, that's what you always love. I know it's true for me. The stuff that was on the radio from like 89, starting around Hammer Time, bit before Hammer Time, and going up through Tupac and Notorious B.I.G. in the mid-90s. When that comes on, or if I listen to that song online somewhere, I'm like, oh, man, this is the greatest stuff ever.
Right. That's interesting because that music takes on a whole nother psychological depth to it once you start getting into relationships and love and stuff like that. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
So I guess
it
for
would
me,
make sense, like evolutionarily, we maybe the whatever myths are people are discussing when you hit like say age 10 to age 16, somewhere in that area, though maybe there's something to do with the brain wiring. Mm-hmm. Where that's the mythologies that your culture is into, those are the mythologies that you will always be into.
That explains a lot about my dad listening to the Beatles all the time.
Yeah. So I guess
that,
for me, when
that's
I was...
on the border. We're almost on the borderline of that. I've had conversations with people where I start talking about like people who are just like still in their 20s who won't know who some of these artists are.
Oh,
and I'm like...
God.
Yeah, and you feel, well, I'm 36. It's not like I'm not young, but I'm not, like, ancient either. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, man.
I'm 48, so it's interesting, you know. I mean, I didn't really grow up with rock and roll in the sense like the Led Zeppelin types. I didn't grow up with that kind of music because I'm from a Latin family.
Right, right.
So it was, like, a whole different, you know. So things that were very mimetic, music that was very had a lot of movement was really appealing to me. So that's why hip-hop, breakdancing, techno, all that kind of stuff's like really, I love it. You know, I love the oldies and goodies.
Right, so when I was like, whatever, 10 or 11, that's probably, you know, Zeppelin, Aerosmith, Rush, Heart. Those were probably my big ones. That was just before my metal phase.
My dad controlled the radio.
Right.
In our house.
I probably got in. I started getting in the metal when I was like probably 14, I think. Around 80 is when that started. So I was probably 13. But yeah, it's pretty much the classic rock stuff. I had an older brother and sister who were 10 and 13 years older than me. So the house always had music blaring.
Shit, still does.
So speaking of going back, I'm gonna have to get going here pretty soon. But yeah. You guys remember this? We got a Gemini, Mars, Sun, Mars, Mercury, and Gemini, and Moon and Virgo. All that's ruled by Mercury, which of course is retrograde. I was listening to I think it's LaTroy Hawkins. He's a baseball player, and he said he's been in baseball so long. He's like 42, so he first became a professional. He's 18, and they're asking, well, what how's the game different today versus when you first broke in when you were 18? And he said the thing that he remembers the most, or one of the things he remembers the most, is back in spring training when he was 18, 19, 20 years old, nobody had cell phones. So you had to wait in line to go call your girlfriend back home. And I have memories of doing that, you know, of like being at baseball camp and having to like the phone, we had one phone for like eight people, and having to, you know, figure out who was going to use it at what time. And now I'm guessing that when you go to, whether it's spring training, if you're a baseball player, or you go up to camp, if you're a kid, whatever, everybody's got cell phones. So it's not even, these kids don't even have to think about how to make a phone call back home.
Yeah. That's true?
Yeah. Everybody would go to Little League practice with a quarter in their pocket so they could call mom to come pick them up or whatever when practice is over.
Geez, my kids die if they don't have their cell phone.
Man, I don't have kids. If I did, I don't know what I would do about them having smartphones. Because I don't think the kids should have them. I think it screws up their brains. I think it screws up our brains, too. But we could at least, if people, you know, our generations, if I stayed off, and I'm guessing it's true for you guys, too, if we all just stayed off the internet, stayed off the phones for 3 months, our brains would begin to, like, go back to normal human brains. Okay. Well, not barks, but... No,
right. I don't think mine ever started normal, but...
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, all the weird way that it's... Like, I know my brain's been rewired from being on the internet so much, and I don't think in a positive way necessarily. Mm-hmm. And we would all still go revert to, like, what we were at, say, 25, if given, in, you know, 3 to 6 months. But these kids, their very neurological wiring of their brain is being formed by the soup of smartphones and the internet and everything. I don't think it's a healthy thing. But you can't. It's like if you're a parent, you can't just take the smartphone away from the kid now.
Right, because it's not like you couldn't find a payphone to be able to call somebody in an emergency.
Not around here.
But the funny this is funny / terrifying, horrifying, frightening. But isn't it funny that I notice once in a while when I'm talking to people that I pattern my sentences how I would a Google search.
You know, it's actually, it's worse than that, Mark, because they say your brain, like, you begin to turn into whatever you use all the time. And so, like, the internet there's certain positive things about the internet and certain negative things about the internet. And I wonder, having spent so much time on there, if it's influenced my personality, whether for positive or for negative. You become like, if you're interfacing with something that is, you just end up becoming like whatever the tool is that you're using.
Yeah. Lay around with, like, not being used.
Yes.
I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very much so. I definitely see that.
I will free myself now.
Right.
Disconnect.
I'm
depressed now.
I'm going to chew on that one for a while. That's interesting.
No, don't be depressed. It's just a matter of... I know I'm taking a break from the internet as much, at least for a few days when this Kickstarter is over, because I've had to spend even more to see. I've been thinking about this stuff now, because the last few weeks, my time on the internet, which was already, you know, more than it should be, has now gone up because I'm responding to phone, email, Facebook, Twitter, posting, you know. And so now it's kind of like become more obvious. I'm like, wow, man, you spend X amount of time on the internet, I don't think it's good for your health. And so I'm going to, after when this is over, I'm going to start taking some more, I'm going to be much more diligent about taking breaks, you know, Well, they even have like a phrase for it now. I forget what, but something where you just unplug days or something. You just completely unplug all your electronic devices.
That's interesting.
Which sounds horrifying
never,
to some
yeah.
people. But like, it's no different than it was basically going back to, you know, 19. There was actually an article about this. It was not from The Onion. It was like family decides to live like it's 1986 again. So they turned off all the modern technology. The only technology was allowed was technology that existed in 1986.
Oh, that could work.
Wow.
Yeah. Mark's looking at me with a sour face.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
Oh, well.
Not overtly fond of
1990?
That
1986
era.
How about 1990?
90 would be a little bit better.
Yeah. All right.
You'd be on 300 baud dial up.
Oh, God. Ouch.
Yeah.
And we thought blog talk was bad sometimes.
Jeez. Myself, I'm
I still remember. I still remember when I first got online hearing the noise. It just seemed so mysterious, the way the phone would do it.
And you knew those beats, you know, you knew those sounds too. You knew if it was wrong.
Right.
It was like. You're like, hey, wait.
But back then, it felt like you were going into a different world. It was still like a you know, unexplored frontier of knowledge and whatnot. And so if you were getting online like in 95, I remember my friend showed me how to get online with the library at school. And it was just like the most mind-blowing thing to me at the time. I was like, wow, you can like talk with people in other countries via this? This is amazing.
Yeah. Right, it's like there's a website for everything. Oh my God.
Yeah, I remember when I first had extended access to the internet, I think it was 97, I was just blown away. I was like, man, anything I want to find out about, like I was really into, you know, lifting weights and working out. And so like I was spending all this time, we had very limited information back then. So it was just like amazing. There's all the it is amazing. And today it's just now it's completely oversaturated, I think. But anyway, which to conclude is why I think we need to have print. We actually almost have to go backward to go forward.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yep. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's a good way to wind up, I think.
Yeah.
Come full circle there.
Yeah, yeah.
So we want to thank our guest, Matt Savinar, for being on. We had a blast.
Absolutely.
On this end.
That was fun.
Cool. Thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely.
And you can find on the famous interweb we've just talked about at NorthBayAstrology.com. And I am psychically predicting a visit to the rabbit hole later in the summer for Matt.
Yes. Yeah, in August.
Fantabulous.
Sounds good.
So, thank you for being
thank
on.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
All right
thank you so much,
right,
Matt.
Appreciate
bye.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That was awesome.
A funny dude, man.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it to laugh. I thought
yeah,
he was going to be all serious. And when he said comic books, I was like, that was like the first thing out of his mouth. I was like, woo, comic books? I don't know anybody got comic books.
Yeah.
Rubberneck to the left here.
Oh. Yep. Great stuff. Great
cool.
stuff. So tomorrow night, the Lion's Lair.
The Lion's Lair.
Host
Adriana
Arts.
Mm-hmm.
And... Thursday, Spontaneous Spirit Talk,
mm-hmm.
Throwback Thursday.
We'll throw something back.
Friday, my Friday show, Mark the Rabbit Holes, is now on at noon on Fridays.
Mm-hmm. And Mud-toe
at midnight. My guest this Friday will be Amira Beth, and I will be posting a listing up for that this afternoon or tonight. She's a very cool person. She does lots of stuff. She... brings forth Atlantean and dolphin energy and communications with many different worlds. Lots of fascinating stuff.
That's cool.
And, so,
and then we have Gary Heron.
And we have
Sunday.
Gary Heron show this Sunday.
6 p.m. I believe.
Yep.
Through the Looking Glass. Ball readings.
Speaking of classic rock, the Rolling Stones are in town this
Saturday. If I stand by the river, I can hear.
So if you are. Stay away from campus Saturday night.
Yeah, well, there's drum circle Saturday night.
Oh, that's right. Stay away from the stadium Saturday night.
Drum Circle at Garcia's.
That's right, Drum Circle. 9 o'clock Saturday night.
All right, folks.
Okay.
Love you much.
Okay.
Take care.
Hope Have a great day.
And peace.
Ciao.